Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. It's been a minute. We've been gone for almost a month. I have Simon Clancy here. I do not have Chris Kaufman. He's dealing with a family situation. He should be back next week. Well, Simon, what did you do with your time off from 3 Yards Per Carry?
I mean, you make it out like we've been away for months. It's been like 3 weeks. So I've literally done nothing.
It felt like
sport. I've tried to work on, I know you've missed us that much. I've tried to work on being funnier, because that's obviously been a thing. And my plagiarism, because that's also been a thing.
Yeah, it's been an interesting, I would say, 2 weeks, because it hasn't been all 3 weeks, but an interesting 2 weeks on Twitter. Yeah, I've been a part of a few polls. I've created a few polls.
It was a set bit. It's an absolute toilet bowl.
It is. Anyway. Yeah. And by the way, there's anybody wondering who's the funniest Dolphins podcaster? There's several, like, real-life comedians that do Dolphins podcasts.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's one guy that's on our podcast who's actually pretty funny. And it's not me. It's
thanks, buddy.
The guy talking to me right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm not a stand-up comedian.
No. And you do know Benny Hill, which is huge.
This shit just comes naturally. I think Benny Hill died before I was even born.
And I'm 45. Had this discussion, and I think he only died like 4 or 5 years ago.
I'm pretty sure he didn't. I'm going to Google it.
Okay.
Keep talking. I'll Google it. He didn't die 4 or 5 years ago. Well, I mean, I'm not even going to. Right. Here we go.
Yeah. When did he die?
Okay, when did you think he died? 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, I would say like 5 years ago, like 2015, maybe something like
that. Yeah, he died in 1992, buddy.
Oh my God.
Fucking hell.
I was just getting into college then.
Yeah, I had just been born.
Jesus.
Something like that. That hadn't really.
A long time ago. Well, there hasn't been much to talk about, you know? There's been a lot of... No. Women's World Cup soccer, a lot in the news, but there hasn't been much to talk about. But as of late, I don't know if you saw it, but there was a proposal of having an 18-game season. Did you see this, Simon?
I did. Is this the Wall Street Journal thing?
Yes.
I mean, I heard on the grapevine one or two teams were interested in what they had to say. This sort of, as part, obviously, the new CBA agreement that is going to rear its ugly head next season, ironically during the NFL's 100th year. And essentially the plan was that I think something like each player was eligible to play a maximum of 16 games. So it meant that for one game per season, I mean, imagine that if you are a fan of the New England Patriots, I mean, you're a fucking moron, but imagine if you are, you know, you've paid your ticket. Imagine if you live in London and you've flown over to see the Patriots, and for the 1 week that you're there, it's the week that Tom Brady has to sit out. So you get to watch Brian Hoyer trying to take apart the Ryan Fitzpatrick-less Miami. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, that would be a good thing. But you know what I mean. You know, you go to Lambeau. This is, you know, one of the great sporting cauldrons of the world. You go to Lambeau Field to watch Aaron Rodgers, and unfortunately, you get to watch, you know, whoever Aaron Rodgers' backup is this season, because Aaron has to sit out because it's part of the CBA agreement where, you know, they can only play 16. I mean, that's bullshit. That's never going to happen. It just won't happen. I don't see any way the league would sign off on that.
Yeah.
The players don't want it. The players don't want it. I don't think the fans particularly want it. I saw a couple of polls on the internet on the weekend. Pro Football Talk did one. Peter King did one. I just don't think there's any interest in doing it. And with the issue around head trauma and concussions and things like that and player injuries, I mean, I think starting quarterbacks missed 60 games last season in the NFL. I mean, nobody wants more. You don't want to get to the playoffs where Brady isn't playing and Mahomes isn't playing and Rodgers isn't playing and Russell Wilson isn't playing. And, you know, that nobody wants to see that. Nobody wants to see backup players. You want to see the best players on the field. And 18 games means you lessen the chance of doing that.
Yeah, and every time I see this proposal, it's always done incorrectly, okay? Like, first of all, like, they didn't really think this through, because in this scenario, you would need a backup long snapper. Who has a backup long snapper? You need a backup punter. You need a backup kicker. You know, like these are things that they really didn't think through. But every time this proposal is done, it's always done incorrectly. Now, what if you did have an 18-game season, you did away with half of the preseason, made it so nobody plays more than two preseason games, but you added more bye weeks and you extended the season, let's say into early March?
I just can't see it. I mean, what happens to the Senior Bowl? What happens to the all those kind of, you know, the knock-on effect? You wouldn't be having the draft until like June. So that lack of time.
Maybe they do what the NBA does, where the NBA Finals is 1 week, then you have a week off, and then you have the draft the following week.
Yeah, I just can't see it. What with the combine and workouts and all those sorts of things. I just, yeah, and I think the NFL likes the way that there are 365 day a year, whatever the word is. It's late here. They like the fact that it's spread out evenly through the off season. It makes the off season interesting. I just don't think that, you know, finishing the season in March, I don't think anybody wants that. Really, do they?
Yeah,
I don't think anybody wants that, because they'll be back playing again. I mean, no.
I've always felt that they were missing at least one bye week. Like, I think one bye week alone, I think, is too little for a team.
I think 16 games is absolutely fine. I just don't think anybody wants. I just don't think anybody wants anything other than what they've got at the moment. Because this is just money. This is a, you know, somebody in the NFL seems determined to kind of kill the golden goose. Yeah. And I don't quite understand why beyond greed.
Yeah. Well, I got a proposal for them. If they want money, do what Jerry Jones proposed a couple of off seasons ago, which was add a playoff team to each conference, have seven playoff teams in each conference. And then
here's a better idea. Just don't fuck with it. It's a really good product. Don't fuck with it.
Although if you have seven playoff teams, you do get some of those 9-7s and 10-6s that have been out in, and then you do reward your top seed with the only bye week in the first week.
Yeah, except that then your top seed often, I mean, I think the bigger issue for playoffs is that your top seed could, you know, your top seed is fine, but the team that's won, you know, let's say two teams go 15-1 in the AFC West and they lose a game to each other. But the Patriots go 15-1 as well. That third 15-1 team, you know, that they have to play a week when a team that's 9-7 has, do you know what I mean? They have a home playoff game. So a team that's won six more games doesn't get a home playoff game. That's a bigger issue for me than it is for adding an extra team in the playoffs. I mean, I just don't. Why fuck with it?
Yeah,
it works really well.
Yeah, one thing they do definitely have to do is reseed by schedule and award the team with the better record the home games during the playoffs. I do believe that, because there is no reason why a team that is 8-8 should host a 12-4 team, and that's already happened. Because I believe it was Seattle that was 7-9. It was that great game where they won in overtime, or they won.
That's right.
Was it an overtime when Marshawn Lynch ran into the
That's
end?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, they played a 12-14, and they were at home. you know, like that made no sense to me. But yeah, that's something they do have to fix. You know, another thing that was in the news, and we'd be remiss if we didn't mention it, was Jim Caldwell. He will not be in the sidelines this year. He will be only consulting, as it were. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, look, it's clearly, I mean, I would imagine it's, I don't want to speculate, but you would assume, given his age, that it potentially a cancerous or a leukemia type issue. Whatever it is, we wish him the very best. Ultimately, you know, it's a disappointment for the team, selfishly, but, you know, he needs to get himself right. He's a good coach, a good guy. He's clearly well-liked in the team. He's been taken to very quickly. My understanding is that, he's been a huge help to Brian Flores and to the team generally, and sort of regarded as a sort of senior figure that people can go to. And, you know, he certainly helped Flores through those early rocky stages. The onus falls on the shoulders of Jerry Stropinski, who people are incredibly high on. You know, he looks like a future offensive coordinator. I know from people in New England that he is viewed long-term as a future head coach and probably would be already an offensive coordinator were he not in New England anyway. Because, you know, just the logjam and people rarely move on, and obviously stuck behind Josh McDaniels and Chad O'Shea. So I think, you know, I think all things point to him having a much bigger role. But ultimately, you wish Jinkle well the best and hope that next season, because Chris made this point, and I'm sure he'll make it when we speak to him later. Chris made this point that actually, realistically, Jim Caldwell is more valuable next season when you are starting Tua Tagovailoa / Jordan Love / Justin Herbert / Jake Fromm / whoever, or the following year when you're starting Trevor Lawrence / Justin Fields / Brock Purdy / whoever. That's when Jim Caldwell is most important. And it seems to me and to all of us, I think, on the podcast, that Josh Rosen has been fine, but he has struggled to grasp the playbook, and he's significantly far behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, that it almost doesn't feel like there's a competition at quarterback. And I feel like if he doesn't win the job...
Well, he's been outplayed.
Ryan Fitzpatrick's not going to make it through the season, so he's going to play at some point. But I don't think, unless Fitzpatrick gets injured in training camp, I think... Josh Rosen won't start, and I think that's a fairly damning indictment on where he is, and I think it's a fairly big red underlining that the Dolphins will be looking at the quarterback position next year and or the year after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a lot of people are saying that this is a huge blow for Josh Rosen, and if they're saying that it's a huge blow for Josh Rosen, is that they expect Josh Rosen to get a run past this year?
I don't necessarily think people think that, but you've still got to accept that people can believe that there is still something left in the Josh Rosen tank. He's still only a kid.
Yeah.
He's still only a baby, and Jim Caldwell would have helped him regardless of whether or not he was starting or whether or not he was the number two quarterback. Because ultimately, look, even if he doesn't work out as a starter for the Dolphins, you go into next season. Let's say the Dolphins draft Tua Tagovailoa, you would imagine Tua would come in and you'd probably push him to be the starter. But you've got a pretty decent backup quarterback in Josh Rosen making absolutely minimal money for the next 2 years. That's a plus in a league where people get injured all the time. I don't think that should be sniffed at all. If he was making $10 million a year, but he's not. He's making $2 million a year. And that's a boon for the Dolphins. That's got to be seen as a positive. And in a quarterback friendly league, in terms of there aren't enough quarterbacks out there, everybody wants one. If Josh Rosen plays 5 or 6 games pretty decently in replacement to Ryan Fitzpatrick, but not decently enough to think he's the answer, but he's still, there's still a potential where some team can go, oh crikey, Derek Carr's got injured in the in the third game of the preseason, he's broken his leg, and how about a fourth round pick for Josh Rosen?
Or maybe Rosen looks really good and they send us a second.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But then at that point, you might not be drafting to it. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of cogs in motion, I think. And we can't just see it as a black and white, he's either good or he's out, because I don't think that's what it'll be. If he's the backup quarterback, then he's a very solid backup quarterback for us to have for 1/2/3 seasons at a very cheap deal. He's also a potential trade chip, not necessarily for what we gave up for him, but you could potentially get something back for him, because this is a quarterback needy league.
Yeah, now let me ask you this, because I asked this of Chris and we were kind of confused as we were asking each other this question. But what kind of season does Josh Rosen have to have to keep you from drafting a quarterback in the first round in the 2020 draft?
You'd like to see him win the starting job, first of all, which we've already discussed that we don't think. He just has to look better than he did the season before. He has to come in, cut down the interceptions, cut down some of the bad throws that he made. I think it's beyond the realms of possibility, because I think this team is so bad, and I think that will be borne out. But you look at those two lines, and I think ultimately, you win games in the trenches, and our trenches are pretty bad. And I think, you're going to struggle to protect a quarterback and an aging quarterback in Ryan Fitzpatrick. You're going to struggle to be able to run the ball because the offensive line is so bad. And you're going to struggle to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks, which is going to put huge pressure on a defensive secondary because the defensive line is so bad. So, you're going to have to be using different ways and means to get to the quarterback. I think it's beyond the realms of possibility to say, oh, Josh Rosen's going to throw 40 touchdowns and 6 picks. If he does that, then all bets are off. Yeah. It's unlikely to happen. I think what you're looking for is a bit of a progression, given the shitty state of the team. I just don't think he's going to come in and become Patrick Mahomes, because I don't think the team is good enough for him to carry. Quarterbacks carry teams But sometimes the team has to be there to help carry the quarterback. I don't think you can just be, you know, Sid Luckman wasn't Sid Luckman because everybody else was shit and he was great. Johnny Unitas wasn't amazing because the rest of the Baltimore team was shit. You know, Otto Graham wasn't arguably the greatest quarterback of all time because the Browns were terrible. Do you see what I mean? Mm. There has to be some, you know, the component parts still have to be there for a quarterback to elevate himself. He can lift good, you know, he can lift mediocre players and make them good. He can lift good players and make them great. It's hard to lift shit players,
yeah,
because you're only ever going to make them mediocre. And, you know, that's ultimately, you know, let's be brutal. We have a very below average roster.
Yeah, I tried to get Chris to commit to, you know, what it would take. And he basically said, if he duplicates Tannehill's best season, I still take a quarterback in the first round. If he's above average in every single category, I still take a quarterback in the first round. And I would say this, if Josh Rosen is above league average in every single category, it shows that he's actually taken a step forward. And you know what? I still take a quarterback in the first round.
I tell you what it's going to be. It's going to be a fascinating discussion because here is the discussion. And I'm sure I have this on relatively good authority. The Dolphins have split the quarterback assessment of this year. They've essentially not just looked at quarterbacks in 2019. They have looked at quarterbacks in a group of 2019, 2020, and predicted 2021. Very hard to do when you're looking at freshmen and redshirt freshmen. But that group of Lawrence, Fields, Purdy, the kid at Wake Forest, Sam Hartman, all those kind of kids that, you know, the 2020 kids, and not just Tua's and Jordan Love's and Herbert's and Fromm's, but also Stephen Montez and KJ Costello and Sam Erlinger and De'Eriq King and those guys, that they have been graded in a not just a year on year. It's throw the whole pot together and let's see where we get to. And we've talked about this ad infinitum, but there are transcendent quarterback talents coming down the pipe. Do you pass up? Do you think that Josh Rosen, the ultimate decision is, do you think Josh Rosen will be good enough to take you to a Super Bowl, given his trajectory? And if so, does that mean that you're comfortable ignoring Lawrence, Tua, Herbert, whoever it is that you fancy, and taking AJ Epenezer or your Tergros Matos or Chase Young or, you know, one of those guys? That's the decision that you're ultimately going to make. Or do you think that actually, I cannot pass over a transcendent quarterback talent, a John Elway, an Andrew Luck, a Peyton Manning, you know, one of the Patrick Mahomes. I cannot pass these guys up because they are too good. And I think what you'll see as well is that, you know, all four of those quarterbacks, Herbert, Tua, Love, Jake Fromm, will all have excellent seasons and they'll almost make themselves whatever the opposite of undraftable is. You know, unmissable, as it were. Yeah. You almost won't be able to pass them up. And you'll see teams as well with good. You know, you might see the New England Patriots. You might see the Green Bay Packers. You might see teams with solid quarterbacks looking, thinking.
Move up. Yes,
absolutely. I mean, look, 2 years ago there was a lot of talk. It was confirmed by Ben Verlin that the Patriots were looking to move up to take Baker Mayfield. You could easily have seen the Patriots taking Kyler Murray. You could easily see next year the Patriots moving up to take Justin Herbert or Jordan Love or Jake Fromm, who fits that system style with Josh McDaniels, who's clearly going to be the next head coach of New England. Jake Fromm to New England fits pretty well in terms of what Fromm has and the sorts of things that you look for, that Josh Daniels looks for in that model New England quarterback. You could absolutely see it. And, you know, and Tom Brady doesn't show a lot of signs of wearing down, but smart teams do smart things. And I think the Dolphins will have to be a smart team. And I just don't think Josh Rosen will be good enough to elevate himself to a level where you say, this is the guy. This is the guy we win with.
Yeah, on Twitter,
the decision will come too soon.
Yeah, on Twitter I said that this is probably the best class since 2004. And if you remember in 2004, the San Diego Chargers had a young quarterback that was ascending that everybody kind of liked in Drew Brees. And they went out and they got Phillip Rivers. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. Who knows? It could even be San Diego. Maybe they stumble this year and they go 7-9, 8-8, and they sell the farm for one of these quarterbacks. Does it make sense? Absolutely. Mm. So there'll be competition for that. Like if the Dolphins go 8-8, they're going to have to spend picks to get their quarterback. I'm telling you.
Yeah, of course. And they've got picks. Yes. They've got picks. But if they go 8-8, if they go 8-8, then, and I suspect they won't do it with Ryan Fitzpatrick, but they'll do it with Josh McDaniels, then, you know, all of a sudden you think to yourself, well, I tell you what if we take, Tyler Biadasz at centre, or we take one of those, there's some serious offensive tackles. Why don't we take the kid from Iowa, the right tackle, Tristan Wirfs, you know, who's going to be a very high pick. Why don't we take the kid from Penn State that I just talked about? Why don't we take AJ Epenezer, the kid at Iowa, who just looks an absolute machine. You know, look at some of those cornerbacks, the kid at Alabama, the Bryce Hall at Virginia. You know, you've got 2 seconds, 2/3, 2/4, 2/5, 2/6, 2/7. There's an awful lot you can do with that team. Do you know what I mean? If you if you draft right, if you think that, wow, okay, Rosen has done really well, and the you know, the arrow is definitely up. It's a big decision for Chris Greer. Does he think to himself he's got enough in that quarterback in Josh Rosen, or does he think, you know what, I kind of can see where his ceiling is going to be, and it's not going to be high enough? Because, you know, it's a tough decision. That's what he's paid for, but it will be a very tough decision. The caveat to that is that he invests those draft picks wisely. He selects lots of good players, he wheels and deals, and he collects himself a series of bonus picks for 2021, and he buys himself a year. He buys himself and Rosen an extra year to think, okay, Josh, you've proved enough. You haven't proved completely, but you've proved enough that, I tell you what, I'm going to take Chase Young with the 3rd overall pick. I'm going to take, you know, the best corner available and the best right tackle available in the 2nd round. I'm going to take that center, you know, from Oregon State in the 3rd round. I'm going to take that running back from, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's buying himself the next year because he knows that there's also a cavalcade of quarterbacks coming in 2021 as well. You've got, you know, Purdy, the Drew Brees alike. You've got Trevor Lawrence, who's could just be beyond special. You've got Justin Fields, who's got, you know, the upside is off the charts. He's Michael Vick / Randall Cunningham. You know, it's going to be fascinating. And I could see Greer buying himself a year if Rosen is good enough.
Yeah, I would just caution Chris Greer, don't overthink it. Just do what the Chargers did. The Chargers knew they had an ascending, you know, uptrending commodity in Drew Brees, and they just went out and they got Phillip Rivers. And did they make a mistake? Did they really make a mistake? Drew Brees is one of the best of all time. Is he better than Phillip Rivers? Absolutely. Yeah. But did they really make a mistake? You know, it was a matter of an evaluation that went sideways on them. But they got themselves a good quarterback anyway. Phillip Rivers has an outside shot at the Hall of Fame. You know, his yardage totals and his touchdowns are going to say something about that. So I wouldn't overthink it. I don't care what Josh Rosen does. Take a quarterback. If you have two really good ones, you could trade one for a 2nd-round pick, you know, in a year's time or so. Well, we have training camp next week. I don't know what you're looking forward to. I'm looking forward to if there's going to be an honest quarterback battle. But what are you looking forward to, Simon?
Do you know what? I've sort of zoned out a little bit because I know it's going to be bad.
Next week when Chris is around, we're going to go really in-depth, position by position, so we could really see how bad this team really is.
Do you know what I'm looking for? I'm looking for the improvements in some of the players that you know are going to stick around and be important pieces. Yeah. Laramie Tunsil is one of them. You know, is Michael Dieter going to be a guy? Christian Wilkins needs to take over a senior role. Charles Harris might be the most important player, maybe apart from Josh Rosen, on the entire team in terms of expectation level. Charles Harris, year 3, if it's not working for him this year, it's not working for him. That's it. You know, these are some of the guys where you think, actually, if Charles Harris suddenly turns in an 8-9 sack season, looks really good, then you think, okay, there's a piece there. Christian Wilkins has a great year. Okay, there's a piece there. You want to see the same level of improvement from year 2 to year 3 that you saw in year 1 to year 2 with Davon Godshall and with Vincent Taylor. Those are important pieces that you want to see. Then you want to see the Jerome Baker. How much, you know, Baker looks a physical freak. You know, he's added weight, he's added muscle, mentality seems on point. You know, what I'm so intrigued to see how Baker is used in this defense. Raekwon McMillan, another one. Is he going to be that Dante Hightower that they've talked about? Is that the role for him? These are the important things. You're not necessarily looking for Ray Lewis's. You're not looking for Champ Bailey's. You're not looking for Richard Seymour's. But what you're looking for are guys that you think, okay, He can be on my team next year when I know that I've got 14 draft picks. Do you know what I mean? I can add, I can add a Stephen Quarterman. I can add a Bryce Hall. I can add a Chase Young to this group. And I know all of a sudden this defense is going to be fantastic. And similarly with the offensive line, you think, okay, Tunsil is there. Dieter is there. Now I can add a Biadasz and a Tristan Wirfs. And all of a sudden I've got a pretty great offensive line.
No, we have $100 million in cap space coming to us.
Well, exactly.
You could buy people too.
You know, these are the important things. I think that you're looking for first-year guys, second-year guys, and Harris is the third-year guy to step up and think. Because we know Minka Fitzpatrick is going to be really good. He's just naturally a gifted footballer. You're just looking for some of those guys that you think, okay, you've made that step. What about those kids, the corner kids, Armstrong and Davis? Yeah, you're looking for those guys to push. Does the kid from Clemson who injured his knee, does he have anything left in the tank or is he gone? You just need somebody to step up and say, okay, the end of the 16-game season, I know that you're going to be around next year and you're going to be a serious contributor. That's what I think I'm looking for. I'm not looking for us to make a playoff run. I'm not looking for us to win six games. But what I am looking for is players that I can count on in 2020 and 2021 where we've got cap space, draft picks, and the arrow is absolutely pointing up on this team. Because that's what you need ultimately.
Yeah, what I'm looking forward to is this. I remember with the past regime, Matt Burke and Adam Gase and such, I was told specifically one time out of practice that, quote unquote, we want set it and forget it guys, meaning we want guys that we don't have to be constantly teaching and prodding and pushing to get things right, to do things the right way. This coaching staff seems to be a little bit different. This coaching staff seems to actually want to outthink and outsmart people. So I'm interested in seeing what schemes they're actually cooking up, because one thing I have noticed so far after going to mini camp and after watching whatever those things were called that Adam Gase called practices the past 3 years, they were very laid back, very relaxed. After watching mini camp, that looked like what I remember football practices used to look like. Very regimented, very, to the point, hands-on. And what I found really interesting was one of the last minicamp practices, I saw Chad O'Shea and Eric Studsville spent in excess of half an hour teaching Kenyon Drake how to properly run a swing pass route. Okay? I never saw anything like that during the 3 years of Adam Gase. I guess it was just assumed that guys knew how to do it. But they were trying to teach him the intricacies of how to come out of the break and how to receive the ball. So, and it was kind of interesting because I was standing right there and they were trying to tell him, if you come out of your break in this angle and you catch it here, you're already leading toward out of bounds. But if you cut it here and you catch it here, you can go outside or you can go inside. And it was really interesting how these guys had a different insight on something as simple as a swing pass of all things. So, we had a coaching staff that really didn't want to do too much teaching with a coaching staff now that really wants to teach and wants to outsmart people. Now, they might not have the horses to do so, but I like to see them try. And I guess that's what I'm really interested in seeing this time around. And, of course, I want to see further development. I want to see Kenyon Drake take a step forward and become who most of us think he could be. Although I have my doubts.
Yeah, no, I agree. You just want fundamentally sound footballers as well.
Mm-hmm. I also find it interesting that Rashad Jones has changed his tune and the team is changing its tune toward Rashad Jones. I guess nobody wants to pony up any picks for him.
No, I don't think so.
So now they're making it sound as if he's in the long term plans, which is I don't know. I just don't see it. I don't see how they can pay him that much at that age for next year. But I don't know who will take him off our hands. I know one guy that definitely has value, and that's Kenny Stills, and there's been no move there, and we don't know yet about what's going to happen with Tyreek Hill. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that's where we would naturally send Kenny, and I think we'd get something for him. I think we'd get something good for him. Maybe, what do we trade for Kenny Stills? It was a third-round pick and the rights to that linebacker that we had, right? That was it. So can we get a third-round pick back? I don't know. If Kansas City's desperate enough, they find themselves with no deep threat and Pat Mahomes, trying to win a Super Bowl, then maybe. But I don't know. I just don't know. Well, this is like a you know, it's a running pastime, but we do it every single year. And that's when the Madden ratings come out. We all get up in arms and bitch about where they rate these guys. And it turns out that one of the guys who's the head rater, I guess you could say, is a Cowboys fan. And all day today on Twitter, people have been complaining how certain Cowboy players have been, I guess, upgraded while their favorite players have been downgraded. There's one player in particular on the Dolphins that, I don't know, they have it out for him. And I had a long discussion with this guy on Twitter about 6 months ago. And back then he was explaining to me that he didn't think that Xavier Howard, and this was a preview, I should have seen it coming. He was explaining to me that he didn't think that Xavier Howard was among the top 30 defensive backs in the NFL. Okay.
Idiots.
Well, yeah, he's an idiot. The ratings came out today and Xavier Howard is an 83.
Okay.
An 83, which means he's the 27th ranked cornerback.
That's horseshit.
Yeah, it's absolutely horseshit. They also put Larry Tunsil as an 84. Now, this is supposedly, now, let's be clear. This is not like five guys in a room. This is supposed to be like a consortium of like ex-scouts and ex-college recruiters that do these ratings. What the hell are they watching? What are they getting from this?
I know. It's I saw Keenan Allen. I mean, I haven't seen any of the ratings at all, but I saw Keenan Allen complaining about his strength. It was 69 or something, and he was in his car filming a video. And, you know, Keenan Allen's one of the best receivers in the NFL and one of the top three or four route runners in the NFL. You can take that one, Travis. Yeah, it's you know, bizarre. Ultimately, players clearly care, but who cares?
Players care because I guess it's a marketing thing, you know? Because they have that thing where you could build your own team and you get like these postcards, and I guess players do get a cut from sales of those things.
Right.
So naturally, if your guy doesn't have a high rating, people are not going to want him. So I guess they don't get a cut of it. So there's a money component to this.
Yeah.
Some of this is kind of insulting. Like, you know, by the way, the biggest dropper is Rashad Jones. He dropped like almost 7 points in one season, which, okay, fair. Wow. You know, he's older. But the top-rated Dolphin is Kenny Stills at 84.
Really?
Yes. Tunsil is right there with him at 84 also, which is strange when, you know, most of the top tackles, left tackles really, are in the 90s or higher.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just – I think that's more reflection of the Dolphins than Larry Tunsil, I think.
Yes, I think that what they are doing – by the way, the Dolphins are the lowest-rated team in the entire game, okay? And they have a 6.9 rating on offense, which is maybe the worst ever. I don't remember another, you know, team having a worse rating than a 69. But yeah, I think it has this is mostly to do with, we think they're going to be bad, so let's give them bad ratings to make sure that they're bad. You know.
Yeah, no, I agree, and like I said, I just think it's a reflection of the fact that we're shit. So let's rate him for shit, so, which is fair, I suppose.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, it's been fun, Simon.
It has
Next
been.
Week, hopefully,
we're back.
We'll have Chris, and we'll do an in-depth training camp preview. I will be at every single training camp practice this year. Every single one. I'll be right there, right in Brian Flores' ear. I'll be in the press conferences. I'll be everywhere. I will be providing updates on fivereasonsports.com as well. As well as on the 3 yards per carry account. All right. Talk to you guys next week. See you then.
Thanks for listening to 3 yards per carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.